You're tuning in to the Moss LeRae Show.
Purpose is more so allowing God's will to be done.
We need to give our kids and our young people the opportunity to dream to be kings and queens.
My identity isn't in what I do, but it's in who I am.
I'm your host, Alicia LeRae Ellis. Never miss a beat. Stay mic'd up with Moss LeRae. So we are here at the Think Box at Case Western University for the preparation of the Think Big Summit. And I have a very special guest with us today to share about yourself. So we want to just introduce yourself and talk about your school and a little bit about your project.
So hi, I'm Kayla Pierce. I'm in 12th grade at Laurel School. And we are in the Innovation Business Project. And our business is called Good Chick. And it is for dietary restricted people, so they will always have a place to eat on the go.
So what kind of like made you guys come up with this idea?
So all of me and my team members, we all have dietary restrictions and we like to travel a lot, and it is very hard if you are road tripping somewhere. You have to pack your own meals. There's no going to a McDonald's or a Burger King on the way.
So what has been the biggest challenge for you all working as a team during this process?
So our biggest challenge was figuring out different ingredients that could fit all the dietary restrictions, like no eggs, no dairy, no gluten, no peanuts. There's a lot to be thought about, and it was a lot for us, but we really figured it out as a team.
That's so awesome. So do you want to be an entrepreneur? Do you have like entrepreneurial aspirations?
I have actually thought about it a lot. My original idea was speech language pathology, but now I'm thinking about minoring in entrepreneurship just because I've had so much fun doing this. And I also run an entrepreneurship business at my school too.
Awesome. Yep. What's the business at school?
So it's called One Coffee Circle, and it's a student led run cafe.
Okay. Quick shout out. If you want to get coffee at school, that's a great place to go to. That's great. So if you could describe entrepreneurship in your own words, like using three words, how would you describe it?
It's very fun, also very challenging, but you have to be very confident to also do it.
So challenging, fun, and confidence.
Yes.
I love that. So we like to wrap up with your message to the world. So what would you like to share to everyone out there to maybe inspiration or a positive message?
My positive message to the world is to support everyone. You never know what they're going through, and to just have fun with whatever you do.
Awesome. Well, you guys have been mic'd up with Moss LeRae. We'll see you guys next time. Peace. Welcome back. We are at the Think Box at Case Western University, and we're preparing for the Think Big Summit in a few weeks. And I have a special guest with me, a student and entrepreneur. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Katie Galvin. I go to Glen Oak High School. I'm a senior this year, and we'll be competing here March 3rd.
Awesome. So what is the concept you guys been working on in the sense of entrepreneurship and business?
Yeah, absolutely. So being seniors this year, it feels like our life just flashed before our eyes. We felt like I was a kindergartner yesterday. So we came up with a time capsule idea. It's not just an empty container. It's an immersive experience kit. So we include 6 different activity pages, or canisters actually, 3 times the size of the average capsule, with all being a third of the price. So
that's so cool. It sounds like really innovative.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So
absolutely.
What's been one of your guys' biggest challenges kind of working as a team and working through this idea concept and getting ready for pitch?
I think our biggest challenge for sure is keeping such a diverse team. I really wanted to have every single skill set I possibly could have on my team. That also means 10 different personalities. So I think just keeping everybody intertwining or mingled and friends all while being teammates.
So are you interested in entrepreneurship, or kind of where do you see yourself in that lane?
Yeah, I am interested in entrepreneurship. I'll be going into Kent next year, majoring in entrepreneurship.
That's so cool. I love entrepreneurship. Obviously, I'm all about it every day, all about the hustle to bustle, day-to-day stuff. So if you can describe entrepreneurship in 3 words, how would you describe it?
Hard, creative, and unique.
I love that. Hard, creative, and unique, for sure. I can definitely agree with that. So we always like to end with kind of a positive message and what your message would be to the world. So what would you want to share?
My message to the world is never, ever stop. Keep
thanks
going.
Never, yes. ever stop. Keep going. Well, Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be back with another episode. So peace. Welcome back to the Think Box at Case Western University. We are preparing for the Think Big Summit in a few weeks. And I have a special guest with me, Will. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I'm Will Aspen. I'm from Sugar Falls High School. And my product is the Eco Kit.
Awesome. So tell us about the Eco Kit.
So it's a kit, obviously. and it come and it like creates a drum. So you can like hook it up to, let's say, a water bottle, and if you tap the water bottle, it'll connect to a speaker, and then the speaker will play like a drum set.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
What made you guys come up with this idea?
So I've always kind of just loved music and drumming, and so I've never had drum kits, so I always kind of wanted one. So I just thought, why don't we make one? So we did.
That's cool. So what has been like the biggest challenge working as a team and kind of going through this process?
Definitely just ironing out ideas. That was definitely the hardest part. Like fixing, like looking where things went wrong, then stepping back and working out ways to fix that. That was definitely the hardest part.
Yeah, that's always, especially when you're working with multiple people, right? Mm-hmm. But it kind of sounds like your idea got buy-in and people jumped on board. So that's really cool. Are you interested in entrepreneurship and business? Do you kind of see yourself going down that path?
Yeah, totally. I always kind of like being my own boss and doing my own thing.
I love that, being your own boss. Yeah. I'm all about that. So if you could describe entrepreneurship in your own words, using three, how would you describe it?
Three words? It's hard. Probably, definitely difficult. Rewarding and motivating.
Okay, I love that. Difficult, rewarding, and motivating. That's really cool. I can definitely relate. I feel like every day it is difficult, but it's also rewarding. The work you put in is the work you can get out, for sure. So we love to end with kind of like your positive message, your pure message to the world. So like, what would you like to share to the world?
Probably just keep working hard. Like, even when times are tough, just, you always know you have yourself, so. Just work hard.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Will, for joining us. We'll be back with another one. Peace out. Again, just want to welcome everyone to the Moss LeRae Show here, powered by the Think Big Summit at Case Western University. So with that being said, I have the pleasure and honor to welcome our keynote speaker, Swish Goswami. I've been practicing that last name. Swish is a CEO of Surf, a tech company. He has worked to connect over 300,000 people on his platform. He's worked with amazing companies like Netflix, Nike, Sony Music, L'Oreal, Electronic Arts, just to name a few. He's also done TED Talks around the world. He's a traveler. He's an author, podcaster, and investor, and award-winning entrepreneur. Doesn't that sound exciting? Yes, right? So with that being said, we want to go ahead and welcome Swish to the stage. You're welcome.
Hey, everyone. How you doing? Good to see everyone. I'm Canadian, by the way. I'm going to come out and say it right now, so I'm sorry for being here. No, I'm kidding.
So, Swish, I share a little bit about your bio, but what about yourself does your bio not cover? If you want to just go ahead and jump in with us.
Sure. Anyone here ever been to Singapore before? I'm curious. One, two, three. Okay. Small island. That's where I'm from. It's in Asia. It's not in China, by the way. When I actually moved to Canada, someone was like, "You're Chinese." I'm like, "No, I'm Singaporean." And they were like, "No, you're Chinese." I'm like, "No, I'm Singaporean." But I was born there, and I grew up there until I was about 9 years old. And my parents decided to move me from the tropical paradise that Singapore is to Calgary, Alberta. How many people here have been to Calgary, Alberta? Okay, not too many. Never go there. It's apparently, well, I know, but it's a winter wasteland, let's just say that. It was the coldest place on planet Earth 3 years ago at one point during the year, and that is colder than the Antarctica. Literally, I talk to my mom almost every day, and she lives in Calgary still, and I'm like, why are you still there? And she just told me, well, your dad just left me here, so I don't know where to go. Morbid joke, but anyways. That's what I did, though, growing up. I grew up in Calgary. I debated a lot. I played basketball a lot. I had no idea what entrepreneurship was about until I went to college in Toronto. And that's where I started my first business. It was a food delivery app that connected students that, you know, were looking for a cheaper alternative for food, which students always look for that, especially in college, to leftover and excess food on college campuses. It was a failed idea. It did not work out. But I caught the bug of entrepreneurship there and then started to build companies from that age onwards.
That's so awesome. And we hear, and most of the students probably heard from your teachers or mentors, that the best entrepreneurs to invest in are those who have failed.
So for your experience, also started my first venture during undergrad. What was that experience like, kind of like in the dorm rooms with your buddies, like going through that process to where you are at now with entrepreneurship?
Yeah, when I did it, I honestly wasn't fully into my business idea right away. I wanted to be a lawyer going into college. I watched too many episodes of Suits, I think, and I thought, oh, Harvey Specter, Mike, these guys look cool. I want to be them. Without realizing, by the way, my brother now is a lawyer, 4.5 years older than me. It is nothing like the TV show Suits. You're not even in court most of the time. You're typically reading through briefs. My brother loves his job, by the way, but it definitely wasn't for me. You know, I thought that it was all just about courtroom dramas, which definitely the law is not all about. But starting the business in college, you know, with FoodShare, it was cool because I came into it almost like a science fair project. Coming up with, you know, the problem, understanding the problem, trying to go talk to people that were affected by the problem, then coming up with a hypothesis on what I think the solution is going to be, only 2 months later to find out that Canada actually has a regulation, the Food Donation Act of 1984. I kid you not, this is a real piece of legislation that doesn't allow Canadians to monetize donated food. Oh, so my entire business idea went out the window because some prime minister back in 1984 was like, Swiss should not start a business at the University of Toronto. And so that was very sad. And we had to kind of figure out a way around it, which we did. Obviously, it didn't work out. but it was cool to be able to kind of go and explore an idea, think about the potential solution, figure out whether we can bring it to market, and then even put it out into market. Even though we failed, I think it was cool to go through that entire process. Because it took me about 3 months to do that process, versus if I was to start again now, I could probably do that entire process in like 2.5 weeks because I know where I could cut corners right. And what's the most important feedback that I need to get.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And one thing you hear a lot about the ideation process is that market research, yeah. Right? So if you would learn that in week one, you mm-hmm. wouldn't even got that far, right? So I think yeah. those things are really critically important. And I love to jump right into the dollars, right? Mm-hmm. Because ideas are not cheap. An idea is free, but to process it and to then implement it, it costs resources. So for you, that fundraising process for you and kind of what you learned during your journey of fundraising and now being an investor, we'll circle back to your investment portfolio, but that early on, like, what did you learn about fundraising and how to really pitch your business to the folks that we were asking for money for?
Yeah, I think one of the things I had maybe a luxury of is when I was in college and university, one of the only good things that I did in college was I was a heavy networker. The way I actually networked back in 2015 was through LinkedIn. How many people here have a LinkedIn profile, out of curiosity? Okay, actually quite a few. Kudos. Back in the day when I was posting on LinkedIn in 2015, the only people that were posting on LinkedIn were either people looking for a job or, actually more commonly, people promoting a Ponzi scheme or a pyramid scheme. There was really no in-between. There wasn't like content creators talking yeah. about personal development, talking about mental health in the workplace like you see now. So for me, I wanted to start posting more actively on LinkedIn and I wanted to meet new people. And I kind of bridged those two ideas together and started interviewing people. I realized that 99% of people in the world love talking about themselves, Exhibit A, and I played to that very simple aspect of human nature. Instead of going to someone over LinkedIn DMs or calling someone or going at an event and asking them for coffee, which takes time away from them, I actually instead said, hey, can I interview you for 10 to 15 minutes? Mm-hmm. Most people came back to me with a yes. More people that said no actually said, no, not right now, but come back to me later. And I went into my calendar and wrote an exact date to follow up. And it was great to be able to meet people that way, because in the process of doing an interview, I could tell somebody about my background, why I was asking certain questions, preface the question with context on what I was looking to do, and then stay in touch with them after I'd already built the relationship. So when it came to fundraising, you know, the early round that we did back in 2018 for SURF, it was not easy, but it wasn't also equally as hard to raise money. You know, I had a lot of high net worth people in my network. We raised from about 21 investors, and we raised about $25,000 each from each one of them, which for high net worth people is not a lot of money. I know, right? Perspective, blown away. But for me at that time, I'm like, 25 grand, holy crap, that's incredible. Thank you. But for each one of those people that I was able to network with, it wasn't a lot of money for them, but it was a great way for them now to build a relationship with me mm-hmm. and continue to move forward.
Yeah, relationship building is key. And I think a lot of times what I heard, especially in undergrad, was networking, networking, networking. But what I learned through that process is about relationship building, because you go to those meetings and you have coffee, and usually you treat or someone, they will treat you because you're in college, right? Usually they'll grab that $2 coffee for you. But then you kind of leave like, what did I gain from this? Maybe a LinkedIn profile or an email, but building that intentional relationship, I found to be really, really key. And you touching upon that just amplifies the importance of people sitting next to you in your classrooms or when you go to events and really pouring into, like, what is your ask? So going to those investors, you had a very specific ask, right? And we had a conversation leading up to the event around entrepreneurship. So kind of putting your couple years back and learning what that word meant, what was that journey for you learning the true meaning of entrepreneurship? And then how did you apply it as it evolved, you know, 10, 12 years later?
Yeah, again, I did not even pretty much know that word until I was like 18, 19 years old, right? I grew up in a immigrant household where maybe the only routes open to me were engineering, the legal field, or the medical field. And a lot of people go through that circumstance, right? You come in, your parents are putting pressure on you to get a safe and secure job or a reliable job, which for sure, these disciplines, by the way, are incredible. They just weren't for me. You know, and if you're someone out there that wants to be a lawyer, doctor, more power to you. But for me, especially when I was in college, I started understanding very quickly that it was not for me. For me, the word entrepreneurship essentially is quite liberating, because it means that any time that I find that there's a problem in this world, I have the tools, at least mentally, to be able to equip myself and think of a solution. Even if you don't act on the idea, I think that is still fine. You can still have an entrepreneurial mindset, and you should have an entrepreneurial mindset despite not being an entrepreneur. I think, candidly, more politicians around the world should have an entrepreneurial mindset, a mindset of, all right, small problems deserve very much focus. You don't need to only think about big national, international problems. There might be a local problem in your backyard that's worth solving, that if you lent a little bit of timeshare or mental timeshare to, it could go a long way. So for me, I think entrepreneurial mindsets and entrepreneurship are two different things.
Yes.
I adopted an entrepreneurial mindset first, coming up with problems, not coming up with problems, but coming up with solutions to problems that I identified. And then obviously I took the plunge into entrepreneurship when I decided to actually go ahead and do something about it.
I love that. And we're seeing a lot too at the high school level and at the college level around training and teaching and equipping students around that entrepreneurial mindset, because what we're seeing in the workplace is that we need more entrepreneurial mindsets versus entrepreneurial led ideas or businesses too. So it's that balance of understanding like how to think entrepreneurially versus being an entrepreneur. And I feel like we're going to see more of those conversations come up. So when we talk about like personal branding, right now I see the hat, right? I see it. And we talked about that a little bit. What's your personal brand, and how can we talk to students directly about creating a personal brand now while they're in high school and preparing for their next step?
Yeah, I think it's very important, right? I think a lot of times, you know, you'll only realize it a bit too late. My brother, for example, realized it a bit too late, is that people do now look at your profile online with a lot more scrutiny and a lot more, let's say, critique than they did back in the day. Most employers will do a background check on social media. They will look at your resume for sure. They'll call you in for an interview. But at a certain stage, they're going to pull up your name. They're going to be like, all right, Mike O'Toole. All right, let's search up Mike's profile on Facebook. Oh, first photo is a beer pong photo. Well, probably not ideal. All right, second photo. Ah, okay. What is he doing? What is that? That's the type of background check that a lot of employers do. And the reason I know that is we do that. and we've learned from a lot of the other startup founders that do that as well. So I think it's important to curate your profile in a certain way. I'm not telling everybody here to be content creators. You don't need to be. If you are, by the way, planning to, try as much as possible to play to your strength right away. You know, you don't need to be good at video, photos, writing articles all at once. For me, I liked writing, which is why the first platform I chose back in 2015 was LinkedIn and not Instagram or TikTok, which back in the day was called Musical.ly. So I think it's important, number one, to think that you don't need to be a content creator. But you need to look at your profile and think objectively. If you were an employer or someone that didn't know you, what would your first impression be looking at your profile? And again, keep some of your aspects of life private. You know, for me, my Facebook profile is very private. You know, you're not going to be able to find too much about it. It's also under a pseudonym, which no one here will ever know. Okay. No one asked. Okay, fine.
I feel like we have to. I feel like I have
it's
to.
It's fine.
Be Facebook
no one cares.
Now.
No, it's fine. It's all good. I'm not hurt. But at the same time, there are other aspects of my profile, like LinkedIn and Instagram, or even, you know, maybe not TikTok yet, thank God. How many people here have TikTok, by the
Everybody.
Way?
Everybody.
It's too addicting. It's so addicting. I had to remove it 2 months ago. I'm like, I can't. I can't even work. Instagram and LinkedIn, though, where you'll find a more public profile of me. And that's where I have, you know, my beliefs. I have what my work is. I have my passions, my interests, my hobbies well represented. Within a couple of seconds, you'll know that I'm a Formula One fan. Within a couple of seconds, you'll know that I'm obsessed about skiing. You'll know that I love video games. You'll know I love traveling. You'll know that right away in a couple of seconds going through my profile. That's the type of stuff you should think about when you're assessing your profile. One final thing to note, you do not need to post in today's world to be a valid contributor on social Yes. media. So on a platform like LinkedIn, you don't need to post content in order to contribute to the platform. What's actually more valuable, in my opinion, is leaving good comments. Go to people that you look up to and leave a valuable comment. You'll find that in today's world, 99% of comments out there are like the fire emoji and the two high fives emoji. And it's not really useful for the person that posted something to see, oh, yeah, it's a fire emoji, thank you, versus a very well thought out comment that actually responds to what they were saying or what the photo was about, if it was something a little bit more professional. So try to leave valuable comments if you are scared or a little bit afraid of putting yourself out there by posting.
Those are great tips, and I feel like we can have a whole like discussion just on social media. But everyone has on their pamphlets Swish's name, so you can go ahead on Instagram, LinkedIn, and connect now. My name is on there as well, and there's some really great examples of everything you just shared on our profiles of how you can represent yourself and also how you can be inspired by maybe where you want to thrive and how you want to thrive. With that being said, you mentioned the addiction of social media, which kind of spares up or steers up some of that, you know, mental health things that we're dealing with in our society and at this level of students and even us as entrepreneurs, right? It's real. This is why we need to travel. This is why we need to be inspired. So can you talk about kind of your personal interest and passion around talking around mental health and the importance of what you apply in your day to day to making sure that you don't kind of fall into some of these things that we're seeing?
Yeah, for me, I've been in go, go, go mode, I think, since I was 17. You know, for me, I came up with the idea for FoodShare back in my first year of college. I ended up actually dropping out of my second year of college. By the way, I do not endorse that, so stay in school, everyone. Please don't leave school. I've met my best friends, by the way, in college. I would never trade my college experience for anything. It was the best 2 years, honestly, of my life. But I had the opportunity to build a company with my co-founder, and that was the second company that we had built. I moved to New York for it. And it was a social media profile at Dunk on Instagram. I don't know if anyone here is a basketball fan. Show of hands, basketball fans. Any Cavaliers fans here?
Yes.
That's funny. I'm a Toronto Raptors fan. I'm sorry. I can't say anything. But terrible year. But I started this basketball profile. And I got so immersed in social media because it was my work. And anytime someone would say, hey, Swish, you're quite addicted to your phone. I'm like, yeah, because I'm working. And to be fair, in my head, I thought I was. You know, I was going through posts and looking at other pages. Back in the day, we were in a Telegram group with Omar from House of Highlights. He hadn't even sold House of Highlights to Bleacher Report yet. And so we kind of came up all together, and it was our job to look at content on the internet, see what was working, what was trending, and try to go and use that for our own page. But it got to the point where I started not associating my idea. I started getting to the point where I was associating my identity essentially to my profile. Mm. You know, if my profile wasn't doing well, if I wasn't gaining on Dunk, if I wasn't getting enough views or likes on Dunk, I was starting to feel sad, disappointed. It got to the point where, you know, I was pretty much on my phone, so much glued on it because I was like looking for that validation. And I don't think this is new. I think a lot of people in this room potentially have gone through it, where you get a little bit too hooked to your online persona or your online profile. That coupled with then, you know, all the stress that comes with building a business, I burnt out, you know, and I remember back in October of 2021 being in a plane when I had my first panic attack. A plane, by the way, is probably the worst place right. to have a panic attack. And it wasn't, by the way, because of Air Canada and how crappy their airline is, but terrible airline, by the way, never go on it. WestJet's the way to go. But it was because I was internally breaking. Like I didn't candidly know my direction. back in October 2021, I didn't know my true identity. I was associating my identity to something that was not very much even within my control all the time. And that's where having that panic attack and then having subsequent panic attacks after, I started realizing that I needed to take care of myself. And so that didn't just mean physical health. For me, it meant more mental health. It meant meditating. It meant journaling. It meant also, by the way, taking a detox and a break. You know, for me, I have a time limit on Instagram now, and I don't spend more than 20 minutes a day on Instagram. Thankfully, my business isn't Dunk anymore. We were able to move on from that project, and my business is very much not on social media, which I like. But even if it was, I know I'd find a way around it because I value mental health so much. I value the idea of not associating my self-worth to my social media profile. I value taking breaks and letting my mind relax along with my body. I value putting myself out there and not caring what other people think as long as I know that in my heart I'm doing the right thing and not hurting anyone in the process. Those are the things that I think I've had to learn the hard way over the last few years.
No, those are great. And I feel like so much of the day-to-day is consumed on social. I mean, I'm on social, I have social media manager, right? And a lot of the content, like this is going to be up on social, right? And it's part of how you can drive a company and a business and a brand, but also setting those boundaries are really, really important. And I think you mentioned one thing around journaling and meditations, traveling, like those are things I also practice. It's like, no, these are things that I need, right? Mm-hmm. You're always giving. And so how do you then pour back into yourself? And I think that's something really to understand about yourself and how you grow in different seasons and what you may require. Well, we have a couple seconds left or a couple minutes left. And I want to kind of jump into some of those soft skills that I know many of us are trying to cultivate now in our early entrepreneurial ventures or trainings. What are some of those soft skills that you can talk a little bit about that you can recommend to invest in and invest our time?
Yeah, there's three main skills that I would definitely write down here. Number one, I mean, beyond the networking tip, which by the way, please take me up on it. You know, interview people, guys. It's such an easy hack to meet new people. You know, and again, whether it's writing an article or whether it's doing a podcast, you could literally record it, by the way, on GarageBand and export it to SoundCloud. That's what I did. I was literally one of the only podcasts I found back in 2016 on SoundCloud with a bunch of wannabe rappers and Kid Laroi. Like, that was the state of affairs back in the day. And it didn't matter because I was just trying to look for an outlet, an easy outlet to be able to meet people, tell their story, and build a relationship with them. But beyond that, I think there's three things. Number one, write problems down. I have a note even right now. I have a full-time job, a company that I'm fully dedicated to. But I still have a note on my phone where I write down problems that I have come up with, saw, talked to people about. I write it down because I think it's always good, even if you're building a business, even if you're thinking about another idea, to constantly let your mind wander to other problems. One of the things I even just thought about on the plane yesterday was Google reviews. Why is it when I go onto a restaurant, I see 4.9 out of 5, but I don't know who those people were? What if there was a cool score that could tell me 4.9 out of 5, but hey, people like you actually gave it a 4.5 out of 5 based on my browsing behavior, publications I visit, places I shop at, videos I watch. I want to find people like me and what they rated a place. This might be a terrible idea. You might be thinking, Swish, that's a terrible idea. But that's where my mind goes to even now. It's trying to write down problems that I think of and then putting it down so that later on, if I have a bit of free time on a run or I'm on a walk, I can think a little bit more about that idea. Number two, get to customer feedback as quickly as you can. If you have an idea, sure, jot it down. Go onto a Word doc. Write down the idea. Do the overall market analysis. What's out there? What are you, like, who are your competitors? What are they pricing at? What is the potential scope for that idea? Do all the research you want, but don't spend too much time on it. The best market research is in the field. When you go talk to people that are potential buyers or people that are affected by your problem, go and try to talk to those people right away because based on their feedback, you'll understand what's out there. Is it really a problem and how much will they pay for it? Is it a problem? What's out there? Will they really pay for it? The three golden questions for any market research that can only come when you talk to people, when you go door knocking, when you get on those interview calls to talk to a prospective customer and try to understand what their context is like, how they're perceiving the overall market and not how you are perceiving it. The final thing I'll note, try as much as possible to also talk to other young founders, to talk to other people about your idea. Don't keep your idea to yourself. My mom constantly was like, oh my God, Swish, I had the idea for Uber 10 years ago. I'm like, Mom, why didn't you build it? Like, literally, we would have been billionaires. But she's like, no, I don't want to tell anyone about it. I think she's lying, by the way. But at the same time, if your idea is so, so simple that someone could literally just copy it from you giving them a one-liner, it's probably not a good idea. So try as much as possible to talk to people that you trust, obviously, friends, family members, teachers. Talk to them about your idea, because I promise you, the best ideas come from a collaboration of minds. A collaboration of minds put together is what typically builds a really great company. Even with Surf, I can't take credit for even 90% of what we built. It's a manifestation of a bunch of people coming together and building out something a lot greater than themselves.
Great stuff. I'm taking mental notes too. I'm happy this is recorded because I can go back. Everyone can go back and rewatch this episode as well. So on the Moss LeRae Show, we love to end each episode with a positive, or what we call pure message. The platform is all about producing a pure message for our generation. So what will be your pure message to this audience and then to the audience on our platform?
Just do it. No, I'm kidding. Trademarked. I do think, you know, a lot of the ideas I've talked about are trying to get you guys out of your seats and hopefully into action. So again, if you've been thinking about an idea, hopefully you got a nugget here that maybe motivates you to go and actually start that idea. Another thing to also, by the way, quickly keep in mind, and maybe this is my final message, is to not rush the process. I think in today's world, with especially the glamorization of entrepreneurship and mainstream media, movies, it almost feels right that you have to be 21 and a billionaire. Right. And that's honestly the type of mindset that I had when I was 19 and 18. After watching movies like The Social Network, I'm like, oh my God, I am so behind. I am so behind. Without realizing that a lot of times people come up with their best ideas in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, and life is actually quite long. So don't rush the process as well of having everything figured out in life. You know, the bio is very kind, and what I've shared is really only the good parts of my life. There's a lot of stuff that I even haven't figured out. I just got my driver's license 4 months ago. I can't cook. I'm an absolute liability in a plane, apparently. I'm a work in progress, and that's what everyone should be as well.
That's great. We love that. So with that, we're just going to give Swish a round of applause for our chat today. And we want to hear from you all. So we have some questions, hopefully, curating from the students. So I think someone's going around with a mic. I see a couple of hands going up.
All right. So a little while ago, you mentioned about how important it is to build networks, and especially with those high-income entrepreneurs. So how do you maintain those relationships with those people?
What's your name, by the way?
Dolph.
Dolph. Great to meet you. So that's a great question, by the way, because typically, like you said, right, a lot of people are going to go out, they'll interview people, they'll meet a lot of people, but the name of the game is obviously maintaining those relationships. So here are just two things I do. Again, you might find a different thing that works for you. I have a note saved of people that I need to monitor. And my dog, for example, is on it. No, I'm kidding. But I have a bunch of people that I've interviewed, or people that I look up to, that I recently were connected to, that I write down there. And honestly, I put a calendar invite at the start of each month to go back into that note and check in with people. So that's number one, you know, and I think over time, if you start doing that, it'll just become a habit. You won't even need the note. You'll just start having those sort of conversations. The second thing is try to intro people to that individual. So if you find cool people that you constantly are interviewing as well, try to put them in touch with each other. It's honestly the best way to also make sure that that original person knows that you're not just like trying to meet them to try to meet someone. You're not just using them as a stepping stone. You're actually valuing their time and are trying to look out for them and think about them even when they don't need something. So wherever you can, try to put your network in touch with each other, because then you start to build quite a super community, if you will. And the greatest thing is anytime now, you know, for example, you put me and Alicia together. Anytime now, Alicia is like, oh, yeah, like, well, how did I meet? Oh, it was Dolph. Dolph connected us. And you're going to come up naturally in conversations with even other people that you might not even know that Alicia or me could put you in touch with. So that would be my second tip, is put it in a note and then try to connect your network to each other.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's great. I definitely had an Excel spreadsheet early on from all the business cards I was collecting. Like, okay, which ones do I need to follow up with? Who's like, I didn't really feel a good vibe or energy. And definitely the networking part is connecting people, because you add value, right? It's all about building that capital too. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Katie Galvin. I go to Glen Oak, but I was wondering, you said you were kind of guided towards law and engineering and even medical school. So, like, was it difficult for you to feel stable as an entrepreneur, especially a young entrepreneur?
Yes, but I thrive in instability. So for me, again, just having moved around a lot growing up, I just typically didn't feel like, you know, maybe that 9-to-5 cubicle job was ideal for me. And again, I'm not trying to say it's the wrong path, right? It is a path for many people, and many people find solace, by the way, in stability. A lot of my friends are getting married right now, and I'm like, oh my God, the pressure. But that is perks of stability, right? Is you start to get ahead, especially on the personal development side. I think a lot of people around me that chose that path of stability are way better at personal development than I am. But for me, I never thought about it like that. I think I was just so obsessed about wanting to build something and wanting to build something valuable that I kind of put everything away, which again came back to bite me later on. So I think there is a balance, by the way, with entrepreneurship. It's a very tough balance to find, but I think you can start off doing two things. One, keep at least one day a week for yourself, if not two, yes. But try to keep one day at least, whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday. Don't think about work. Go and do whatever, you know, makes you happy. And the second thing is calendar blocking. So my team now knows that they cannot book meetings from 9 to 10. They can't book meetings from 1 to 2. They can't book meetings after 6 p.m. because I'm not going to take a call then. I could respond to your Slack message. I might get back to your email, but I'm probably eating breakfast, eating lunch, or working out. Like, you're not going to reach me during those times. So for me, I think that was very important because previously I didn't do that. And I'd get a bunch of calls that would pop up during intervals where I probably should be eating lunch. And I kept doing things like, oh, it's just one day. I'll just skip lunch for now. And it started to grow into something a bit more problematic.
Mm-hmm. Good questions.
Yeah, great question so far. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
My name is Treasure Vincent. My question is, how do you handle internal pressure? Like, we get pressure, you know, maybe sometimes from our peers and from other people in the business world. But, like, how do you handle the pressure that you give yourself?
Alicia, do you want to take a stab at that?
Pressures. Yeah. I think staying grounded to who you are. I think oftentimes we put our value tag on what other people think and their perceptions of us. And I literally just saw a post yesterday, like, the perceptions, what people have perceptions of you really doesn't matter. It's who you are because they only have a perception, whether they're following on social media or they have you in your class. It's really how you value yourself. And I think that's what I've learned over time is that I had to care first about me before I can expect anyone else to care about me. And I set the tone of how I value, whether I'm going to have that time block or I'm going to say no to a gig. It's really how I value myself. And I also have learned how to price myself in that way, too, in looking at the trends in that way. But definitely the value in you learning. First, you got to learn yourself in that value, and then you have to expect people and set that as a parameter and a requirement of how people treat you is first being stoned in within yourself and within your value.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. And I also think when it comes to internal pressure, by the way, as well, like I'm very ambitious. I've grown up putting probably the most pressure on myself than any time, you know, my parents even obviously set pressures on me, but like I probably put way more pressure on myself to have everything figured out too early, which is why that last piece of advice, I really would pay heed to it. You don't need to have everything figured out too early on. But I think I've also done two things that have maybe helped me a little bit. Number one is celebrating small wins. Yeah. It's always good to know when you're moving forward, and it's always good to recognize that. So, like, even if it means at the end of the day writing down that one small win that you had, if it was like, oh, I kept putting this doc away, you know, and I kept didn't want to do it, but then I actually spent time today putting an hour in of work to finish that doc and sent it out, and you're celebrating that at the end of the day, it's great. It's a great thing for your mental health to keep feeling like you're making progress. You're making those small, constant improvements to a much larger goal. The second thing is don't have more than a one-year goal. And I, you know, this is, again, it works for me. It might not work for you. I'm not an expert here. But I found that when I told myself, oh, at 25, I need to be doing this. At 30, I need to be doing this. And at 35, I need to be doing this. It was reckless. It made it so that when I turned 25, I was like, oh, well, I have some of this, but why don't I have that? And I wasn't feeling great. And on top of that, it doesn't also accommodate that just life changes.
Right.
You know, like your interests and passions changes. I disagree with the narrative out there that you have one passion in life and that's what you need to pursue. I have 15 passions in life. You know, like I'm so excited about politics. I'm excited about movies. I love basketball. I love building tech companies within the field of data and privacy, which is what we've been building for the last 5 years. Like, I am interested about many different, I'm watching Vampire Diaries right now. Where was this my whole life? No idea, right? So, like, I'm passionate about so many different things. I think that's one reason why I stay away from more than a one-year goal, is because I don't even know who I'm going to be in terms of my interests and hobbies and passions 1 year from now. I don't want to know. That's the beauty of life, is I can change and be a different person then.
Yeah. And that's it, in a sense of pressure too. Sometimes it's great to ask the question, especially in a job or an employer. Like, sometimes we put those pressures on ourselves, but it's not even required of us, really. So asking those questions, like, okay, what is the expectation here? Are you expecting to have this by tomorrow, or is this like a week out or 2 weeks out? So those type of things can alleviate some of that pressure that sometimes we put on ourselves. And celebrating the small wins, like, it was silly, but like, I celebrated every semester I finished in college, because I was a first year graduate or a first generation graduate in my family. And so I celebrated those smaller wins, because it's like, I didn't know if I was going to get through another semester. So let me celebrate this one. So those are really great points. Who else we got?
Hi, I'm Carter from a university school. I own and run a small business at my school. And the trap that I find myself thinking in is all of my ideas come in the form of small businesses. Yeah. I was wondering how I can kind of get over that hump of going from small scale to larger scale.
Yeah, great question. All good ideas start as a small business, in my opinion. So Airbnb, for example, was a cereal company. I don't know if many people know this, but Airbnb was going to run out of money before they got into Y Combinator. And in order to be able to fund the company, Brian Chesky was selling presidential cereal. So he had Obama O's, and he sold $400,000 worth of Obama O's back in 2008. They were able to sustain their runway and then get into Y Combinator, which obviously took them to another level. Shopify started off as a surfboarding shop. And obviously, you know, Toby and Harley then came together and built that into an e-commerce behemoth, where you have Kim Kardashian Skims, for example, operating on a Shopify platform. So number one, every business starts that way. I think the key things to expansion typically look as twofold. Is there another customer segment out there for you to be able to tackle? Or is there an existing customer segment in a different place? That's typically one of the two routes that a business will go through. The way to obviously reach those people or reach that new location is entirely up to you, right? Whether you bootstrap and you use revenue, you don't take maybe the biggest salary, and you put more money back into the business to be able to fund maybe a small remote team somewhere else, or whether you raise money and you give up a bit of equity and you raise, you know, 100 grand, 500 grand, a million, whatever you budget and forecast that you need to be able to get into that new market. So there's two typical routes. If I was you, I would try to go down the path of bootstrapping for as long as you can. It's one regret I had, is because of the, again, going back to the network that I had and maybe the ease of raising capital early on, I went down the path of fundraising way too early without keeping it to the latest possible minute, where you have the most traction, you typically will have a more fleshed out product, and you'll get a better valuation and potentially a better deal overall for your company. So that would be my recommendation. But again, either you're going after an existing customer segment in a new location, or you're going after a new customer segment altogether. The research is where I think you will figure out what the bigger revenue potential is, but also which one will likely cost more. And based on that, you can figure out which path to go down.
Yeah, I think sometimes too, we get this misconception about small businesses that it means small money, but that's not always the case. You know, working with hundreds of business owners and entrepreneurs here in Northeast Ohio, what we realized is that sometimes the small businesses can scale, but not actually break through to be a scalable in a sense of employees, because it's not necessary. So understanding the industry that you're in can really add value to, like, does this need to stay small, but not as it relates to our bank account small, but just small as like staff and team and reach, because I think small businesses it can be up to 100 employees.
Oh, yeah.
That's still a small business. So I think sometimes we think about these multi-giants like Uber and Airbnb, billion-dollar market shares, but you know, sometimes those small businesses can be very successful too. You can be a millionaire and have a small business. So I think sometimes those are the misconceptions, that just because we have small in front of it doesn't actually mean like you can't generate revenue from it.
Hi, my name is Klaas from Olmsted Falls. And my question for you would be, did you have like days where you were like not motivated to stand up in the morning? And what was like the reason for you to keep going? What was like your final goal for the companies at some point to stand up and to keep going? Because obviously you are not staying in bed, so you wouldn't sit here if you would be not motivated to do your thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. There are for sure days where I don't want to get out of bed. There are days where I don't even want to be on my laptop. Those are natural. And, you know, I think, again, another big lie perhaps is people telling you that if you're passionate about it, you'll always be motivated and energetic about your job. And it's like, no, yeah. Right? Like, human beings at the end of the day sometimes just want to go to the beach and chill. And sometimes they just want to play basketball with their friends, or they want to, you know, log on and play video games, or they want to go shopping at the mall and they don't want to have to worry about work. Motivation for me is different than inspiration. That's the way I normally handle that question is, you will feel inspired from people, from videos, but that's all typically short term. You'll feel inspired for a couple of hours or a couple of days. Those days will go by and then you'll come back and be like, where's my next dose of inspiration? Motivation is very intrinsic for me. So motivation is something that you can always go to, especially on the days where you're lost or tired or not energetic. And the way to find motivation is to answer the why, is to answer the why are you doing this? So for me, it comes from, you know, my family, candidly. You know, my family are immigrants to Canada, but more importantly, my mom had a terrible divorce 5 years ago. It's the reason why I started my company. It's the reason why I continue to work hard, is because she raised me and my brother, and she did it by being a teacher, teaching immigrants and refugees how to speak English when they come to Canada, a very giving, self-serving job. And so that's why I do what I do. And so anytime I do have those days where I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed, well, I'm like, you know, what would mom do? And I'm like, yeah, you have more, you know, mortgage to pay, you got a tiring job, you got two kids to feed. I don't really think I should be complaining. And that's my why. That's my intrinsic motivation for me. I don't know, Alicia, if you have
No, that's great. And I think to that point is like that motivational piece is not, you can find it. You have to find it. And I think, you know, I'm getting ready to go into my 10th year as an entrepreneur. And I'm just now, last year was like the first year I just now started saying no to things. I felt like it was a sweet year for me as I elevate up and go up and scale. It's like, okay, now I can take more, maybe some more trips and take more time for me. So eventually you will get to a place like maybe you need that day in bed. So I kind of go on the opposite side of that and saying sometimes our body is telling us what we need too. And I think that, you know, early on, I didn't have the luxury to stay in bed. But now it's just like, well, maybe I need this day off. Maybe I need this day at the beach. And not, sometimes I feel like I put myself down more and have to be harder on myself because I want that or I crave that. But that's also what we're working towards. We're working to live a luxury life that we can say yes and no to the things that we want. So making sure that, you know, in those moments, you are also around people who are pouring into you and encouraging you to keep going, because I think that's a huge part of encouraging, having that tribe around you as well. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Awesome. I think that was our last question. So we'll be around too. So if you guys want to come up to us, we'll be around all day and looking forward to everyone's pitches. So again, just to give Swish a round
thank
of
you.
Applause for having
thank
our
you.
Chat. Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the Moss Larae Show. We are live at the Think Big Summit, and we have your grand winners here, Wild Wreck. How are you guys feeling today?
We're feeling good.
Yes. Why don't you go and introduce yourself and your team.
I'm Eliana Gates, the salesperson.
I'm Elizabeth Flanagan, the graphic designer.
And I'm Samantha, the support and key partners.
And tell us about Wild Wreck.
Our product is a flashing ultraviolet LED light that connects to three parts of the car, but doesn't cause distraction to any other drivers because humans can't see the light, but animals can, which deters them away from the road. And it also is connected to a lux sensor and a solar panel to tell the product when to turn on and off.
Yeah, so I was one of the judges of this pitch, and I was blown away by the technology, the idea. So how did you guys kind of come up with this concept?
We are all drivers in high school, and we were just thinking about the experiences we've had with animals on the road and just we've asked around and we did an open survey and other people related to our problem, so we decided to try to fix it.
All right, quick question. What was your guys' biggest challenge?
Probably the presenting, if I'm being honest. Okay. We knew everything, we knew all the information, but when it came down to actually showing what we knew, it was a little difficult, but clearly we nailed it.
I love it. You guys did phenomenal. I love to end each interview with a positive or a pure message. So what would be your guys' pure message to our audience today?
Try to save the environment and animals, as well as saving yourself as much as you can.
I love it. Thank you guys so much. Congratulations. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Moss LeRae Show. We have the winners here of Flashback. Why don't you guys, round of applause for you guys. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, everyone clapping for us. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and your team.
Hi, my name is Katie Galvin. I'm the CEO of Flashback. This is Braden Keyes. He's my vice president. And Morgan Stoker, marketing representative. Becca Klotz, PR representative.
So this is so cool. A couple weeks ago, you and I chatted. We did the behind the scenes about your product. To see you guys on the main stage today, and you guys are taking home the grand finale prize. How does it feel?
It feels incredible. A lot of hard work went into this, but it's all worth it.
So tell us about the concept of the idea.
The whole concept basically is to make a time capsule, but not just an empty container, more of a kit. So we include activity sheets, we include 6 different activity sheets, as well as inspiration for items you can add to the spacious container.
Biggest challenge with you guys working together leading up to today, or even today, because being on a stage can be nerve-wracking. How did it feel?
I think the biggest challenge was just like staying calm throughout the whole process and getting confident up on stage.
Awesome. So as you know, we like to end the episode with a pure message, a positive message. So after today's experience, what will be your pure message to our audience and maybe students watching, trying to get inspired around entrepreneurship and taking their ideas to the next level?
If you have an idea, run with it. Never, ever stop. Just keep going with that idea until you become successful.
Awesome. We're here with the winners at the Think Big Summit. We're peacing out. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the Moss LeRae Show. You can follow us on all social media at Moss LeRae. That's MASLARAE. You can also check out our website for more behind-the-scenes content at mossleRae.com.